This is an NPR News special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A suicide bomb today left at least 20 people dead, dozens more injured, and took the life of Benazir Bhutto, one of the most important political figures in Pakistan. She was many things in her 54 years, twice Pakistan's prime minister and a political prisoner, too. She faced charges, never proved, of corruption, as well as accusations that she was too weak to run the government, much less control Pakistan's powerful military. In her years as a political exile, she became well known as a champion of political moderation. She opposed Islamic radicals, and after she returned to her country this past October, many in Pakistan believed or hoped that she would win a victory in next month's parliamentary elections and begin the transition to true democracy. Over the course of this hour, we'll hear much more about who she was and what her death means for her country, for the region, and for the United States. We'll hear from journalists and academics, from Pakistan's ambassador to the United States, and from a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. But we begin today in Pakistan's capital, Islamabad, with Peter Wanakut, senior correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. And thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And I understand that you've only recently arrived. What can you tell us about the bomb that blew up earlier today in Rawalpindi, the military headquarters town that's just a few miles away from you there?
Yes, it happened at a campaign rally just at the end of the rally. Ms. Bhutto was getting into her car and someone approached her, apparently the bomber, and there was a huge blast. I hear from one of the government officials, been briefed on the matter, that pellets from a vest, a suicide vest, hit her chest and neck, and she died from her wounds. There are other reports that she died from a bullet wound to her neck, but it's unclear right now.
And she died about an hour after the explosion.
Correct. She was rushed to a hospital and succumbed to her wounds.
Is there any indication yet of who may have done this?
No, there's not yet. Of course, there are suspects. Pakistan is fighting a Islamic insurgency, and Ms. Bhutto had been awfully critical of Mr. Musharraf's ability to wage that war, so that earned her the wrath of Islamic militants. She also, during her time as prime minister, earned enemies inside the government, and she's hinted more than once that some people inside Mr. Musharraf's government might be plotting to kill her.
And there were, at the very least, accusations today by some of her supporters that the government did not do enough to protect her.
That's correct. She was the target of a suicide attack, assassination attempt on October 18th, the day that she returned to a rapturous homecoming from years in exile. And at that time, she also blamed elements inside Mr. Musharraf's government, and she asked for tighter security. And the government says it provided it. We see that no one's immune to these suicide attacks.
What's been the reaction? Is there? I know that the coffin has been taken out of the hospital where she was pronounced dead and is in the hands of her supporters.
That's right. The coffin, Ms. Bhutto's body, is heading back to her hometown in Sindh province. And the reaction has been visceral, both anger and grief. There's street violence in Karachi, where she where her political base was, and lots of protests, spontaneous riots in other cities such as Rawalpindi and Peshawar.
Elections were scheduled to be held in Pakistan June 8th. Many political parties there were already deciding to boycott those elections for any number of reasons. At this point, what's likely to happen?
It's not clear at this point. It is the other major national leader, Nawaz Sharif, has said that his party will indeed boycott the elections. That party is the Pakistan Muslim League, under Nawaz Sharif. With major parties boycotting elections, it's going to be very difficult for any elected leader to have a perceived popular mandate. The government has yet to say whether or not they will postpone the elections from the January 8th date.
Peter Wanacott, thanks you very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Peter Wanacott, a senior correspondent for the Wall Street Journal, with us by phone from Islamabad in Pakistan. Zia Meehan is an expert on nuclear policy issues. He's a research scientist with the Program on Science and Global Security at Princeton University's Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs. And Zia Meehan joins us now from a studio on the Princeton University campus. And it's good to have you with us today.
It's good to be here.
And I wonder, have you been in contact with friends in Pakistan? What are they telling you?
I have been on the phone to friends in Islamabad this morning, and the news, of course, is taken as a great tragedy by many people. Benazir Bhutto reflected the hopes and aspirations of many people in Pakistan, and her killing in this terrible massacre at her election rally has come as a great shock, but not as a terrible surprise. It's one of those tragedies that many people feared was looming, given the situation that has been developing in Pakistan with the rise of the Islamic militancy and the suicide bombings that have spread across the country.
And if she would have participated in these elections in a couple of weeks' time, they would have seen as having some element of legitimacy. If she's not there, what happens now?
That's a very good question, because her return to Pakistan from her years in exile was something that was managed by the Bush administration and by the British government through talks with her and with General Musharraf, where the game plan was that to prop up the failing legitimacy of the Musharraf administration, Benazir Bhutto would come back, win a majority in the elections, and provide the political support that the Musharraf needed to continue to rule. And all that is now lost, because there is, in the People's Party, no alternative leadership that we can see right now. It's a very charismatic party built around the Bhutto family, and she inherited the party from her father, who had founded it. And so there is no second-tier leadership that commands the kind of support that Benazir had. And so the party is lost and leaderless. And without it, it's hard to see who will step in to fill the void, either in the People's Party or in terms of providing the support that Musharraf had hoped that she would provide.
General Musharraf, no longer general and president, just President Musharraf. He took off the uniform as he ended the state of emergency earlier this month in Pakistan. Yet the military remains the strongest force by far in Pakistani politics, in Pakistani life. What's likely to be the reaction there?
I think the military is going to now be thrown back to where it was before Benazir returned and before the state of emergency, in which they confront a growing legitimacy crisis. They've been in power since Musharraf first seized control from Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif in 1999. And so they suffer the problem of having been incumbents for a very long time. And many things are now laid at their door in terms of economic issues, political issues, the militancy, and many other things. And they're desperately unpopular in Pakistan. A recent poll found that 70% of Pakistanis felt that General Musharraf should step down and his administration should not be allowed to continue to govern. And so they have really got to go back to square one to try and find out how they can construct some kind of political support for themselves. The best thing, of course, to do would be for General Musharraf to step down as president and put in a genuine caretaker administration and begin a process where we can have some kind of genuine democratic process start to take place, rather than one that General Musharraf tries to engineer to suit himself.
Peter Wanacott was telling us from Islamabad just a moment ago, there are, at least in some cities, near riot situations. Is there concern that this could spiral out of control?
Well, Benazir Bhutto's party is a national party. It has a lot of support, especially among the poor. And inflation has been rising in Pakistan. The poor have suffered quite significantly during the last decade economically. And they were hoping that she would come to power and that there would be move toward greater policies that stressed economic justice and equality and create jobs for the poor. And so they are, you know, enraged by what's happening, and many of them hold the Musharraf administration responsible, if only for being negligent in not providing proper security for her, given the threats that have been made and the earlier attack that was made on her life in Karachi only a few weeks ago.
And finally, before we let you go, there is, of course, a war underway on Pakistan's western frontier. That's in Afghanistan. And always relations with India have to be the first concern of a Pakistani administration. In terms of both those borders, how will the death of Benazir Bhutto affect things?
Well, the sad truth of the matter is that even when Benazir Bhutto was prime minister twice in the late 80s and in the mid-90s, prime ministers don't have much say in crucial questions of national security policy or foreign policy. The military has always insisted that they are the ones who make policy in those areas. And so, you know, when she was in power or when she was in opposition, and now, you know, tragically with her death, you know, it is General Musharraf and the military leadership that controls policy making in those areas. And so one doesn't see any reason why those should change. And in fact, is part of changing the constitution to give himself and the office of president more power in preparing for the elections that we were expecting next week. General Musharraf actually took powers away from the office of prime minister and gave them to himself, including control over the nuclear weapons directly and control over appointing the next chief of the army, which were typically powers that the prime minister was supposed to have as the head of government. And so even if Benazir Bhutto had lived and even if she had won the elections and become prime minister, she would have been in a situation of having an office but very little power, with real power continuing to reside with President Musharraf and the military that he represents.
Zia Meehan, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Zia Meehan, an expert on nuclear policy issues, joined us today from studios at Princeton University, where he's a researcher at the Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs. Benazir Bhutto, the former prime minister of Pakistan, killed in an attack at a political rally earlier today. Coming up, we'll speak with Ambassador Peter Galbraith, a childhood friend of Bhutto's, and later we'll hear from Pakistani author and journalist Ahmed Rashid. Stay with us. This is a special from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This is an NPR News special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Benazir Bhutto, who served twice as Prime Minister of Pakistan, died today in an attack on a political rally in Rawalpindi. Bhutto was the last member of a political dynasty, one that was touched repeatedly by violence. Her father served as Prime Minister until he was ousted in a military coup and later hanged. Her two brothers suffered violent deaths as well. When she was first elected Prime Minister in 1988, she became the first female to lead an Islamic country. Both she and her husband faced corruption charges, and she lived most of the past 8 years in exile. In October, General Pervez Musharraf dropped the charges to clear the way for her return to Pakistan in what many saw as the first step toward a power-sharing arrangement. At a welcome rally in Karachi, she narrowly escaped two bombs that killed 140. In an op-ed published shortly afterwards, she wrote, "I did not come this far in life to be intimidated by suicide bombers. With the blood of my supporters on the streets and on our clothes, I reaffirm my commitment to my values." Peter Galbraith knew her better than most people. He was a childhood friend. He's now a senior diplomatic fellow at the Center for Arms Control and Nonproliferation. Ambassador Galbraith joins us now by phone from Norway, and we're very sorry for your loss.
Well, it's a terrible day.
You and Benazir Bhutto were friends. When was the last time you spoke with her?
A few weeks ago. We spoke, and I also had a email message from her, actually from her BlackBerry at the airport in Dubai before she returned in October, which I thought of today because it was more or less a farewell message. It said, "Thank you for your friendship and for your advice and help all these years." And clearly, it was a sign that you know, that she knew that something might happen. Of course, there was the suicide bomb attack that day, but she escaped death that time.
And did it surprise you that even though she narrowly escaped death, she said, "I'm going on"?
No. She entitled her autobiography, "Daughter of Destiny," and that's, I think, what she was. Once her father was hanged, she had a mission. It was to restore democracy in Pakistan. She did it in 88. She was trying to do it this time. And you quoted her saying that with her, so many of her supporters having died, that she really couldn't take the safe course. And in Pakistani politics, you simply have to be seen by people.
And seen by people, go out and appear at rallies to literally appear before people.
That's right. I mean, this is a country where hundreds of thousands of people turn out to see their leaders. And she had a draw that nobody in Pakistan had. I was with her the night she won the first elections, and we went from her house to the airport and then to Karachi. Her constituency is a rural constituency in Sindh. There were people 10 deep along either side of the road for 25 kilometers, and there were 500,000 people at the airport at Karachi to greet her. Just extraordinary.
We know her as a Democrat, as a campaigner for any number of issues. You knew her as a person. What was she like?
She was very genuine, in fact, and not guarded. I mean, in that sense, she was quite different from most politicians. They put up walls. But with her close friends, she was very relaxed. She'd talk about her life. She was always interested in other people's lives, not just in political issues, but personal issues. She wasn't shy about offering her opinions on issues, but in a good-natured way. Not always well-informed, but good-natured. But on the subject of Pakistan, she knew her mind, and she really was passionate on that question.
And was I'm sure you've heard that so many people said the deal under which she returned to Pakistan, the charges against her were dropped, and it was seen by many as the first step in a power-sharing arrangement with General Musharraf. Is that something that you would agree with?
Absolutely, is what was going on, and she was criticized by many of her supporters for contemplating this, but she had a very clear logic, and she and I talked about it, and it was this. You can be elected prime minister of Pakistan, but that doesn't mean you can do anything, because the people who have power in Pakistan are the military and the intelligence services. And so in order to accomplish something, she needed the military, and that's where Musharraf came in. She had hoped to build a moderate power-sharing arrangement that might then go ahead, make peace with India, reorient some of the military spending away from the military, which gobbles up a huge part of the Pakistani budget, get on to address some of the country's social problems. But she couldn't do that alone, no matter how large an electoral mandate she had.
Tell us a little bit about, I was going to say her family, but she had several. But we'll start with her immediate family. This is, as we mentioned, a family been touched by violence many times.
Sadly, her father, of course, was hanged, and that very much changed her life. I don't think she would have been on the track to be prime minister if that hadn't happened. Her mother was struck on the head by the military dictator who hanged her father, by his police, and eventually developed dementia. And then two of her brothers were murdered, one by his wife, who had gotten poison from some source, perhaps the Pakistani intelligence services, and the other in an ambush in Karachi. And now her, so of her generation, only her younger sister, Sanam, is still alive. And then she has a husband who is also in politics, and three children, the oldest of which was born when she was running for prime minister in 1988. And her daughter, Bilal, was born when she was prime minister. So she actually became the first serving head of government ever to have a baby.
And what of her political family? The Pakistan People's Party is generally portrayed as to some degree, an extension of Benazir Bhutto, of her charisma.
Well, of course, it was founded by her father, and it was an institution of the Bhutto family, but it's also the only national institution in Pakistan. It was the only party that had support in both Sindh, where the Bhuttos were from. This is Pakistan's second-largest province with 25% of the population, and in the Punjab, which is the largest with 60%. all other institutions in Pakistan are much more narrow. The military is essentially a Punjabi institution. 90% come from the Punjab. There are almost no Sindhi officers. And the same thing with the bureaucracy and other parts of the government. So she's gone. I'm not sure her party can survive. And I'm not sure there are going to be any national institutions left in Pakistan. It was a borderline failed state, because the national institutions never took root, democracy never took root, and it never really coalesced around a national identity. And she was the one chance to do that, and now she's gone.
You paint a bleak picture. If this is indeed a nearly a failed state, it's one with nuclear weapons that lies between another nuclear-powered state, India, and the conflict in Afghanistan. It's a country at the crossroads of history at the moment.
It is, and next to Iran, and it's had, and you have a government that operates with different, almost independent or semi-independent fiefdoms. After all, AQ Khan was proliferating nuclear technology to North Korea, to Libya, to Iran, to some degree on his own. Almost certainly the military knew what he was up to and gave some quiet approval, but it's not clear that the military actually controlled it. And the intelligence services, the ISI, Inter Services Intelligence, is a law unto itself. It's a real rogue agency that has links to Al-Qaeda, that was supporting the Taliban, never accepted the alliance with the United States. Now, this is a very dangerous country and a very dangerous situation.
Ambassador Peter Galbraith speaking to us about his friend Benazir Bhutto. And Ambassador, we thank you for your time today. And again, we're sorry for your loss.
Well, Neil, thank you, and good talking to you.
Peter Galbraith, now a senior diplomatic fellow at the Center for Arms and Nonproliferation, and he joined us on the phone from Norway. We turn now to Pakistani journalist and author Ahmed Rashid. He joins us on the line from his home in Lahore in Pakistan. And Ahmed Rashid, nice to talk with you again, and sorry it's under these circumstances.
Yes, the news has been terrible.
What is likely to be, do you think, the reaction to this terrible shock?
It's very difficult to say at the moment, but tonight already the second largest opposition party, led by former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, has said that they will boycott the elections on January 8th. I think the government is going to have to move now to cancel or postpone or delay the elections. I don't think elections can be held under these circumstances. Tomorrow will be the funeral of Benazir Bhutto. Then there's a 40-day period of mourning. I don't think anyone under these circumstances and with this mourning period, which is obligatory in Islam, I don't think anybody can risk, frankly, having elections.
And what is likely to be the reaction or the result for Ms. Benazir Bhutto's party, the Pakistan People's Party, which we've been hearing was created by her father and lately an extension of herself?
Well, one thing the Bhuttos never did was to prepare for a succession, and a succession with a non-Bhutto. The fact is that now she has a sister who lives in London but who has never been in politics and is unlikely to want to lead the party. Her husband now is a single parent of three teenage children. I don't think he's going to take the risk. And the party is now actually faced with the real problem of agreeing on a leader who is a non-Bhutto and rallying behind that leader. Whether the party will be able to do that and to keep together in the light of the fact that the army and Musharraf are bound to try and split the party and create grouplets within the party, all that I think still has to be seen. But without a doubt, it's a huge challenge for the party.
And as we also hear in some reports from Pakistan this evening, there are, a combination mourners, and it's spilling over in some places to rioters in their response, blaming the government, for the very least, at not protecting Benazir Bhutto properly.
Yes, certainly. I mean, I think everyone I've spoken to, people out on the streets and ordinary people are, all convinced of a kind of conspiracy theory that the government either were directly behind the assassination attempt or at least did not provide adequate protection to Ms. Bhutto. Now, I don't think that is the case. I mean, clearly, this was a very methodically planned assassination attempt involving a sniper, involving suicide bombers. It has all the hallmarks of an Al-Qaeda-trained group operating. But the fact is that the suspicions are so high because, of course, just a couple of months ago when Bhutto returned to Pakistan, there was a suicide attack against her convoy. 140 people were killed. And the government has still not found any of the culprits, and it refused to accept Benazir's demand that foreign investigators should be called in. Tonight, already, the Interior Minister has again ruled out any foreign investigators being called in to investigate this most recent bombing. I think that is extremely short-sighted of the government, given the present political temperature.
We're talking with Pakistani journalist and author Ahmed Rashid. This is an NPR News special on the assassination of Benazir Bhutto. And Ahmed Rashid, it appeared that President Musharraf was counting heavily on a victory by Benazir Bhutto in these upcoming elections on January the 8th, elections which you say will probably now be postponed. Where does this leave him?
Well, it's uncertain. I mean, frankly, in recent days, it was becoming clearer that Musharraf didn't want to share power with Benazir Bhutto. In fact, he seemed to be leaning towards his former allies in the Muslim League Party, who've been ruling Pakistan for the last 5 years. He seemed to be leaning on them to win the elections. But clearly, you know, the government is in a total mess right now. I mean, if the government postpones elections, what kind of future is Musharraf going to have for himself, given that nobody now, none of the opposition parties, are going to be willing to talk to him or to sit down with him or to work out a new election timetable, a new election date, or the ground rules for a new election? I think Musharraf today is now more isolated and more discredited than ever before. And I think that is going to be the sort of medium-term legacy of this assassination. What happens to President Musharraf? Is he going to survive the fallout from this assassination or not?
And another way, again, we have no information, or certainly no conclusive information yet on who may have carried out this attack, but turn this question on the head that the police always use. Who benefits? Who comes out well as a result of this assassination?
Well, who benefits clearly, for number one, are the extremists of all hues and shapes and sizes, the Taliban, the Pakistani and Afghan Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and other extremist groups in Pakistan who would not like to see a concerted political drive against extremism, and they would like to see this continuation of political chaos and a vacuum, which of course has existed in Pakistan ever since Musharraf imposed an emergency. This vacuum has only got larger, and clearly the extremists want to fill it. The other beneficiaries, but in no way I think are they involved in the assassination attempts, are the ruling party, the Pakistan Muslim League, which has been allied to President Musharraf. If Musharraf goes ahead with elections, they would be the likely beneficiaries of those elections.
Just to clarify, there are two branches of the Pakistani Muslim League, one aligned with Nawaz Sharif, and they're boycotting the elections, the other aligned with the current president, Pervez Musharraf. And finally, as you look at this situation, Ahmed Rashid, in the short term, is there real concern that the situation can get out of control?
I think in the short term there's enormous concern tonight that the situation can get out of control. As I said, we have the funeral and then we have the days of mourning. We've had extensive rioting in all the major cities tonight in Pakistan. This, I hope, does not continue tomorrow, but it could do, especially as emotions are running so high. And then we are faced with these political decisions: what to do about the elections, what to do about extremism, what to do about the investigation into her killing. all these decisions, whichever way the government goes, whichever decision the government takes, is going to be controversial. It's going to be opposed by one section or the other of the population or of the political spectrum. There are no winners here in this whatsoever. And not to speak of what this is going to do to the economy, to the growth rate, to poverty, to inflation, which is already running very high, and all the other issues.
Ahmed Rashid joining us on the line from his home in Lahore in Pakistan. Stay with us. We'll be talking with Pakistan's ambassador to the United States. This is a special from NPR News. This is an NPR News special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about the assassination of former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto, killed earlier today in a suicide bomb attack after a rally in Rawalpindi in Pakistan. Earlier today, President Bush demanded that those responsible for the killing be brought to justice.
Laura and I extend our deepest condolences to the family of Benazir Bhutto, to her friends, to her supporters. We send our condolences to the families of the others who were killed in today's violence. We send our condolences to all the people of Pakistan on this tragic occasion. The United States strongly condemns this cowardly act by murderous extremists who are trying to undermine Pakistan's democracy. Those who committed this crime must be brought to justice. Mrs. Bhutto served her nation twice as Prime Minister, and she knew that her return to Pakistan earlier this year put her life at risk. Yet she refused to allow assassins to dictate the course of her country. We stand with the people of Pakistan in their struggle against the forces of terror and extremism. We urge them to honor Benazir Bhutto's memory by continuing with the democratic process for which she so bravely gave her life.
President Bush speaking earlier today in Crawford, Texas. After she returned to Pakistan in October, at a welcome home rally in her home province in Karachi, she narrowly escaped death. 140 of her supporters did not. Shortly afterwards, she published an op-ed in the Financial Times. "I did not come this far in life to be intimidated by suicide bombers," she wrote. "There's a battle raging in Pakistan for the hearts and minds of a new generation. It's a battle for the future of Pakistan as a democratic nation. The new generation will choose moderation or extremism. It will choose education or illiteracy. It will choose dictatorship or democracy. It will choose tolerance or bigotry. And it will choose peace or war. I returned to Pakistan this week to lead the fight for democracy. With the blood of my supporters on the streets and on our clothes, I reaffirm my commitment to these values. The attack on me was more than an attack on an individual. It was meant as an attack on all the political forces in Pakistan that want democracy. The attack was on Pakistan itself. It was an attack on the human and political rights of every citizen and on the political process. It was intended to intimidate and blackmail all the political parties in our society. It was a warning to members of civil society. The extremists thrive under dictatorship. They know that moderation and democracy is their undoing. They will stop at nothing to undo both. The militants know that democracy can save Pakistan from the politics of extremism preached by the warlords. They're trying to take over the state of Pakistan by attacking its political process and challenging its law enforcement. They cannot murder the dreams and hopes of the poor people of Pakistan of democracy for a better future. The international community has condemned the terrorist attacks of October 18th in Karachi, grieved with the families of the dead, prayed for an early recovery of the injured. All our thoughts, prayers, and sympathies are with those who laid down their lives or were wounded and their families. They made the ultimate sacrifice for the cause of democracy and the fundamental rights of the people. May God rest their souls in eternal peace. The greatest memorial to these brave citizens will be a strong, viable, and moderate democratic Pakistan." Again, those are the words of Benazir Bhutto, written in an op-ed article in the Financial Times shortly after she barely survived bombs which attacked a political rally in Karachi, her hometown, shortly after her return to Pakistan in October. And joining us now is Jackie Northam, NPR's correspondent, who recently returned from a visit to Pakistan. And Jackie, it's good to have you with us
today.
Hi, Neil. And as you look at the political situation in Pakistan, Benazir Bhutto seemed to be the linchpin of that everybody saw as a way out of the crisis afflicting the Pervez Musharraf, discredited leader of the country. Is not too far to go.
Well, certainly the administration was viewing her that way. They were pinning all their hopes that she would come in and give some sort of civilian face to the government there after Musharraf, some way they could cobble together a government and get the country back on the road to democracy, more importantly, to stabilize the country. And the Bush administration was pushing that very hard. They engineered her return, and they encouraged this power-sharing deal.
And we are talking about the difficulties faced by President Musharraf at this point, but certainly the Bush administration and indeed their allies in London, the British government, played a part in this as well, and they're now facing a policy conundrum.
Oh, they certainly are. They really are. They're sort of caught out with no plan B. Part of the problem that the next administration should think about, whatever it is not to place all their hopes on a personality. They should be placing it on a party. If you think about Benazir's party, the Pakistan People's Party, she was chairperson for life. There is nobody to replace her in that party. And that should be one of the short-term things people are saying with the Bush administration is to bring in another leader with the PPP, her party, and to bring somebody to the fore. There is nobody right now to replace her.
NPR National Security Correspondent Jackie Northam with us here in the studio. Joining us now is Ambassador Mahmoud Ali Durrani, Pakistan's ambassador to the United States, joining us from the embassy here in Washington, D.C. Mr. Ambassador, all of us extend our condolences for your loss.
Thank you very much. That's very kind of you. It's a very sad day for Pakistan and for the people of Pakistan and for democracy in Pakistan.
And can you tell us how President Musharraf reacted to this this explosion today?
Well, I spoke to the president this morning, I think about an hour and a half after the explosion. He was very, very sad, and he thought it's a great shock, and he grieved with the family of Benazir Bhutto, and he said that he promises that he will get to the bottom of this and get the people who are behind this crime and punish them. And he said that hopefully the nation will now resolve to move forward, and this will give them further impetus to move to destroy the terrorists and extremists in our country.
Mr. Ambassador, with all respect, there were similar promises after the bombs that killed 140 people at Benazir Bhutto's welcome home rally in Karachi on October 18th. As far as I know, there's been no follow-up on those promises.
No, I mean, this is a point of view that there's no follow-up. There is follow-up. But there's no electric switch that you switch it from one end to the other, and suddenly everything goes honky-dory. That doesn't happen. I'm saying there'll be a resolve. It's not a battle which is going to finish now. You know that in Afghanistan. You know that in Iraq. A resolve doesn't mean it's an overnight event that something will be done and be resolved. It means that we are committed, and we are more committed after this incident. We don't want our senior political leaders killed by terrorists, and we will move ahead. There will be, I can guarantee you, there will continue to be terrorist attacks, and we'll continue to fight them. Eventually, we will win, but it's not an overnight trick.
And will there be elections on January the 8th?
God willing.
At this point, they're scheduled
yes,
to go ahead.
Yes, sir.
And despite the fact you saw Mr. Nawaz Sharif said his party would not be participating.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. There will be elections. I think if we don't have elections, in my estimation, then the terrorists have won. This is what they want. They don't want elections. They don't want a proper democratic system. So I think we'll be losing out on that. And the government, unless there is some major problem, they are committed to have elections.
Yet how is that going to be possible if many of the major parties don't participate?
Well, I suppose you know there are about 49 political parties which are participating. And to the best of my knowledge, the PPP has not said that they will not fight the election. I think if they want to continue with the legacy of Benazir, they will fight elections. And to the best of my knowledge, they will.
And what can you tell us about the situation in Pakistan tonight? We've had reports of, grief spilling over into rioting in major cities.
Yes, sir. That I believe I've heard of that too. that it has happened in Pakistan, and particularly in the province of Sindh from Benazir. There is frustration, there is anger, and people are out, and, you know, the typical thing that our people do is they go and burn some gas stations, some buses, some trucks, and the first finger goes many times towards the government. But I'm sure their maturity will come in. People will realize that that maybe the best way to fight terrorism is not burn buses and gas stations, but is to have a united front.
And so you expect that the result of this will be a more determined country?
I definitely can. I'm sure that it will be a more determined country to fight terrorism. That is true.
Ambassador, thanks very much for your time today.
My pleasure, sir.
Mahmood Ali Durrani is Pakistan's ambassador to the United States. He joined us today from the Pakistani embassy here in Washington, D.C. With us now to talk about what this may mean for U.S.-Pakistani relations is Senator Robert Menendez, a Democrat from New Jersey, a member of the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee, with us today from his office in Newark, New Jersey. Senator Menendez, thanks very much for taking the time to be with us.
Well, good to be with you.
And what's the effect, do you think, of the assassination of Benazir Bhutto on Pakistani-U.S. relations?
Well, first, let me just say that our thoughts and prayers are with the husband and family of Benazir Bhutto and with the people of Pakistan. And certainly, I hope that our government insists on a thorough investigation of what happened today to make sure that we know exactly what took place in this assassination. In terms of the relationship, you know, I held a hearing earlier about a month ago, looking at our policies towards Pakistan, particularly $10 billion in financial assistance to Pakistan since 2001. And I questioned at that time at that hearing, where we had Ambassador Boucher before the committee, that in spite of $10 billion, we have al-Qaeda and the Taliban with a safe haven in the Fatah region. We have Osama bin Laden still on the loose in the region. Anti-Americanism remains high. Musharraf has repeatedly exercised the powers of a dictator. And now today we have this assassination. Do we dare call our policies a success? And so we really need to look at whether we have actually put all of our marbles in the hands of Musharraf simply on a security context, and of course security is important to us. Our policies need to be reviewed to make sure that we help the moderates within the Pakistani society be part of the future Pakistan. And I questioned then, before this tragic event today, whether or not free and fair elections could really be held, considering the time frame, considering the fact of the state of emergency that Musharraf created, the detention of some of the leaders of the two major parties, and the whole process. How could we really say then that free and fair elections would take place on January 8th? And now, between the assassination of former Prime Minister Bhutto and the declarations of Sharif's party saying that they will boycott the parliamentary elections, I'm not quite sure how those elections can be viewed as useful if neither opposition party would have normal participation.
We're speaking with Senator Robert Menendez, a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, about the meaning of the assassination of Benazir Bhutto earlier today. This is a special from NPR News. And Senator Menendez, as you look ahead, obviously the United States and Britain had invested a great deal of political and diplomatic leverage in helping to broker the deal by which Benazir Bhutto returned to Pakistan. And again, a lot of people thought this was the first step in a power-sharing arrangement, which would give some legitimacy if her party should do well in next month's elections, which a lot of people anticipated, and that she arranged to share power with General Musharraf. He is president, she is prime minister. That appears to be ashes now.
It certainly does. And, as we move towards this date, and in one respect, we certainly would want, if this act was an act of terrorism and extremism, I mean, no one's claimed responsibility for it yet, but if that is the case, if that's what we find out the case to be, of course you don't want the terrorists to win by delaying elections. By the same token, you want the people of Pakistan to have a real process, not just an election for election's sake. You want a real process to take place. And with the assassination of Benazir Bhutto, I'm not sure that within her party there is an obvious successor. I don't think there is. And secondly, if there is the boycotting by the Pakistan Muslim League, the Sharif's party, then it effectively removes the two main opposition parties from the process. And I think in doing so, it calls into question the underlying legitimacy of the elections. And so, while it's a little early, we have to see how this evolves, because at some point we have to question whether or not we are truly funding a democratic process in Pakistan, or whether we have alienated the moderate center that we need to nourish in Pakistan by siding so squarely with Musharraf and the resources that we have given him, and almost the tacit ability to allow him to declare states of emergency and to use, in essence, the powers of a dictatorship in such a way because we cherish security above all else. I think we have to be balancing the desire for security, which is important to us, with the necessity of moving towards a democratic process in Pakistan.
Senator, you mentioned earlier security is important. Obviously it is. Pakistan is critical to the war against terror. As you mentioned, Al-Qaeda, such as it is believed to be based in Pakistan. Osama bin Laden is believed to be based in Pakistan. The United States would have a great deal of difficulty conducting a war in Afghanistan without the help of the Pakistanis. It's a nuclear-armed country next to another nuclear-armed country, and that's India, with which the United States is also trying to improve relations. Pakistan is absolutely critical at this juncture in history.
Absolutely. And what we do in that respect is critical as well. I don't believe at this point in time we have concerns about the security of nuclear weapons. You know, the military is still in charge there. Musharraf is still in charge there at this point in time. That's not an immediate concern. But certainly, the stability of Pakistan between sectarian violence, between Islamic extremists, the challenges of a resurged Al-Qaeda in the Fatah area. I mean, I look at it and I say to myself, we really have to have an examination of our policy. Because it is so important. It is so important in our security challenges, both in the region as well as here at home. But it also is important to ensure that we are not seen by the Pakistani people as imposing Musharraf and his power over them, but being an honest broker in this process. And if we fail to do so, then I think we risk putting all of our security in the hands of Musharraf. And I think we have learned over history, with the Shah Iran, with others, that is a dangerous proposition.
Senator Menendez, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Robert Menendez, a Democrat from New Jersey, a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, with us from his office today in Newark. You've been listening to a special from NPR News on the assassination of Benazir Bhutto. Stay tuned to NPR News for the latest on the situation in Pakistan and more on the life and the death of Benazir Bhutto. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.